Hi, everyone. I'm Heather Rogers, head of the Keys School, a K-8 independent school here in Palo Alto. And at school, we've been trying out a new educational effort for parents, particularly, around intentional parenting. Knowing how busy parents are in this increasingly hurried world, we wanted to produce some podcasts so that you parents could listen and digest at your leisure and get some important information from experts. And today, I'm delighted that we have Dr. Christine Carter, who is a sociologist and an author of Raising Happiness, The Sweet Spot, and her new book, The New Adolescence. If you don't know Christine, she's a sought-after keynote speaker and a senior fellow at UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center. She draws on scientific research to help people lead their most courageous, joyful, meaningful, and productive lives. And she's a dear friend. So I'm just so grateful, Christine, that you're giving us some time in November. Since it's Thanksgiving, I just want to express my gratitude for you.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm so happy to be here. It's a delight to be talking with you.
All right. So we're going to dive right into some questions about gratitude, and hopefully you can enlighten us.
All right. Well, I'll do my best.
Here we go. Gratitude comes fairly naturally for some people, but for others, expressing gratitude can feel really hard and uncomfortable. What first steps would you recommend for someone who is less comfortable with gratitude practices?
Well, I think that is an important question to just acknowledge that gratitude can make us feel really vulnerable. And because if you define vulnerability as emotional exposure, and this is an emotional expression, it can make people feel really reluctant to express it. They can feel vulnerable, especially tweeners, middle school students. The research shows that, you know, in every family, there are people who struggle to express their emotions, and gratitude is just one of them. But gratitude has an additional load for kids of certain ages because it can make us feel really beholden. And so if you're saying that you're grateful for somebody else, research shows that it can make middle schoolers feel more dependent just at a time when they're trying to push away and be more independent. So it's important to not force kids to say what they feel grateful for, and to distinguish a gratitude practice as a family. I'm not saying don't have gratitude practices. There's huge benefits to it, even if your kids feel, or anybody in your family. A lot of times there are spouses that don't want to do this too, right? Mm-hmm. If gratitude doesn't come supernaturally to everybody. So having gratitude practices which enable people to reap the benefits of noticing what they feel grateful for and what they appreciate in their lives without creating unnecessary emotional exposure. Mm. So that can just be silent reflections. And there is a lot of evidence that even just thinking about something that you're grateful for in another person can improve your relationship with that person. And so we know that just thinking about what you're grateful for is a powerful practice. Mm-hmm. So not like pushing kids to write you a gratitude letter,
right?
Like
right.
Either their mother or their father or whatever.
Right.
Like not pushing them to express gratitude to you as their parents, I think is particularly important. And a little trick as they go through a particularly self-centered stage can be to ask them what they appreciate about themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what is it that you feel grateful for about yourself? And that can make them feel independent.
That's great. We should all be asking ourselves that question probably. I know, right? In this busy world. Well, what are some ways that I can practice gratitude with my family that don't feel so forced? Or if you could share some of your practices around gratitude, because I know you've built this in with your family as well.
Yes, I had the really good research around gratitude started coming out when my kids were 2 and 4 and they're teenagers now. And so it's been interesting to watch how our family gratitude practices have evolved over that time. It began, and this is still my all-time favorite, it began with just asking kids what their three good things about the day would be. And even a two-year-old can do that. You know, younger kids tend to respond very well. They like to reflect on what was positive during the day, and that works. And, you know, my kids did that until, like, I can remember when Fiona first went away to school. It was such a part of her bedtime routine to reflect on what she was good about her day that she texted me what was good about her day before she would go to bed. So that was a great practice for our family.
So this was a high schooler, right? A high schooler off. When she went off as a freshman, she was texting you.
Yes. Wow. Another really positive, I mean, we talked about, we go around the table at dinner time and talk about what we're grateful for. We used to do it really religiously. And now it's sort of like when there's a lull in the conversation, one of the kids will say, well, what are we grateful for? And we'll go around the table again. It's like the familiarity of it is, I think, quite reassuring to them, even though they're kind of at the age where it would feel forced if I did it every single night. So backing off on like the daily pieces of this and letting kids lead as they get older helps make it not so forced. Another gratitude practice on a family member's birthday. Everybody goes around during the cake and says what they appreciate about the birthday person. And sometimes it's just like one word, or sometimes it's a phrase, or like it, so sometimes it's a story from the previous year. And it's become this really meaningful tradition. It's very predictable for our kids. We do it every birthday dinner. We do it always during the cake. The reason I mention that is because those are some aspects of a really good family routine that involves, or a tradition that involves, gratitude, right? People need to be able to count on it. And the attention to the ritual aspect of it is really important. So if you think about, like, I feel I married a Jewish man, and I feel like the Jews have lots of really good rituals, right? Mm-hmm. And they're very clear about exactly how everything goes, right? Like what the quote unquote rules are around the, you know, Shabbat and what gets said and when it gets said and all that kind of stuff. And that is something that has in our family evolved to be really important. Like originally it was like, are we going to do the appreciations or not? Did the person want it or not? Should we do it during dinner, or should we wait till after dinner? And once we sort of nailed down all of, like, this is how it goes, people can relax around the practice, and it loses that the anxiety around it that can make things feel a little forced. So that was another one that, like, has come back. Like, the kids will call and say, oh, it was my best friend's or my roommate's birthday today, and we did appreciations. Like, they've brought it into their community. So those are some favorites.
So within a family or our school, what can we do to create a culture where gratitude and appreciation flourish?
I think the main thing is to have really predictable practices that are externally demonstrated. So within a school, for example, having a gratitude wall or a gratitude tree, or maybe you have an advisory or a homeroom type of thing, and having practices that go with the existing structure of your school routines or your family routines. And that is because I think gratitude practices they start to really pick up speed when they become automatic. Not that you automatically think the same things that you're grateful for, because that is actually not a great way to feel an authentic sense of gratitude, but just that that the culture is a culture of gratitude when it's expected that you will be able to notice and name the things that you appreciate in that in that culture. Because that is, I mean, increasingly we are living in cultures of scarcity, right? Where we feel like we don't have enough time. We don't have enough time, but maybe money or stuff or likes on Instagram, who knows, right? Like it's this more is more kind of a culture, which actually, if you want more of something, it's signaling to your brain that you don't have enough of it. And so we sort of walk around in these cultures of scarcity. And if in our family life and in our school cultures, we can let kids walk into an area where they're not in a scarcity mindset because they're already habitually looking for where they have enough or where they have a lot of something. That is a very different mindset that creates a very different emotional response.
Mm-hmm. And state of being.
Like, yeah, yeah. Blood flow in the brain. Everything changes when you move from scarcity to abundance.
What is some of the science behind that? I know you're a neuroscience person. What's the health? What are some of the health benefits you get from a gratitude practice?
You know, I should have mentioned this when we were talking about people for whom gratitude doesn't come naturally, because actually when we look at the benefits of a gratitude practice, actually counting your blessings in one way or another, the people who benefit the most are the people who are most hesitant in the first place, for whom it doesn't come naturally,
wow.
Right? So we see the biggest increases in happiness. So the benefits of practicing gratitude are so, the list is so long, it's almost absurd. So there are emotional benefits. People who practice gratitude tend on average to be about 25% happier than the people who are counting their hassles, which is what we kind of do. We sort of like talk about how busy and hassled we are all the time, right? 25% happier is a lot happier. It's really a lot. So there are emotional benefits, there are physical benefits. People feel stronger, they sleep better, they exercise more. The people around them report that they're more emotionally supportive, they're more practically supportive. I mean, it is just like, you name it, if you want it, you could probably have it by practicing gratitude.
All right. Okay? Right.
The benefits are enormous.
So Christine, why do we get these benefits when we practice gratitude? Why do we get these health benefits and emotional benefits?
Well, all of our emotions have a physiological effect in our body. So we are more familiar with the negative emotions, right? Like if you get angry or anxious, your heart rate might go up and you have a stress response that doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. The positive emotions, on the other hand, function to reverse any sort of fight or flight response, any sort of stress response that the body might be having. So you feel an authentic sense of gratitude for something in your life, and your heart rate is likely to come down, your blood pressure will come down, blood flow to certain parts of the brain associated with executive function, for example, will be restored, creative thinking. It can activate the vagus nerve, which creates a sort of warm spreading feeling in your chest. So all of these things basically they feel good. They give us a sense of well-being, right? Because a sense of safety, and it reverses that stress response, which can make us feel exhausted. So when we feel better rested because we've been practicing gratitude, it's mostly because our stress response is reversed in that way. And then, of course, gratitude is a very social emotion. And one of the things that we know about happiness is that a person's happiness is best predicted by how connected they feel to the people around them. And so any emotion like love or compassion or gratitude that serves to connect us to other people more deeply is going to create a sense of overall well-being. And gratitude does that. And it's sort of an interesting thing. The flip side of middle schoolers feeling beholden to people they express gratitude to is that it can also, in all people, create increased feelings of self-worth. And the theory about why this might be is that if I thank you for doing something for me, I'm acknowledging that you've incurred a cost for me. And if you've incurred a cost for me, then we must be really connected and I must be worth something.
Wow. Sneaks that in there.
Yeah.
Awesome. So starting a gratitude practice early on can improve, I would think, your little one's self-esteem.
Absolutely. And a sense of their belonging in your family or at your school. But what I will say is it's never too late, right? I don't think that, you could have teenagers who seem really grouchy about everything in your family, and I would still institute family gratitude practices. And if they don't want to practice it with you, that's fine. You do it at dinner. You talk about every night after night, what you are grateful for. And if they, come up with the same thing, you can challenge them to think of something new. And they can be grouchy about it for as long as they want, because just by posing the question, you're getting them to think about what they're grateful for.
Right.
And I actually, there was a sociology professor who's now emeritus who had had teenage twins a long time ago when I first started doing this. And she was like, oh, that might work with your littles, but it is not going to work with my teenagers. And she started it and they resisted, her husband resisted. She was like, I just live in this family of gratitude resistors. It's terrible. It's not working for me. And then months later, I get a call and she said, Christine, I'm calling you from Paris. I just have to tell you, we're on a family vacation and we were having dinner in a fancy French restaurant. And one of the twins said, how come we don't do our gratitude practice during dinner on vacation? And I nearly died. So you never know.
The gratitude that is great. You can take it on the road.
You can take it on the road, and the resistors might actually be missing it.
There you go. Well, Christine, thank you so much for taking your time to join me for this brief podcast. Before we time out here, I just wanted to mention that you have a new book coming out, The New Adolescence, right?
I do.
Can you give us just a little teaser so that we know what's coming and we can all hop on and purchase the book, and because it seems really timely and important.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's called The New Adolescence, Raising Happy and Successful Teens in the Age of Anxiety and Distraction. And it's really a guide to helping parents be intentional, just like your podcast, right? And around teenagers. Everything is different for us now, for teenagers today, right? We're having, as parents, to deal with things that didn't even exist, we didn't have vaping or sexting or the levels of, we didn't have the internet, right? So it's really changed everything. And so this is kind of a guide to what you can do as a parent, because so much can feel so out of our control. And so many teenagers actually are really struggling. And what I've found in my research is that there's a lot that parents can do to make being a teenager easier and to make being the parent of a teenager easier.
Well, fantastic. Thank you for putting your time to that and sharing it with us. And we'll have to get you down to the Keys School so you can have a coffee and conversation with our families and we can learn more about that being in Silicon Valley. In an increasingly hurried world, that's part of our mission, is wanting kids to have a childhood and be able to be creative and pause and reflect. So it seems really appropriate and want to get you down here. In the meantime, I just want to thank Christine again. I want to thank all of you for listening and hope you have a fantastic, restful, and wonderful Thanksgiving, and you can work your gratitude around the table when you're getting together with family.
Oh, I'm really happy to talk to you.
Thanks, Christine.